and welcome to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And it is Wednesday, and it is 11 till 1 p.m. today that we'll be on Central Time. And this program is part of the RBN radio network. And I appreciate people tuning in today. And we're going to kind of pick up where we left off last week. We were talking a little bit, quite a bit, about the underwater sonars, and we sort of finished up on that topic. We've got a lot of call-ins towards the end of the show. And we'll accept call-ins today for folks that didn't get in last week. And we'll do that in a little bit. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit about cell phones. I want to bring that subject up because it's hit the news again in recent days, the idea that there may be problems associated with health issues associated with cell phones has come up. It's, you know, the European reports on this come out about every year. We get another major study out of Europe, and we started looking at this subject a number of years ago, right after the very first controversies. And some will remember there was a Florida lawsuit where someone had asserted that they had been given a tumor, essentially, in their brain, a brain tumor, from overuse of their cell phone. The person subsequently died, and it created quite a controversy. The Congress started looking at the subject. In fact, after congressional hearings, there was an insistence on getting the industry actually to take a look at the health effects. And so the industry spent $25 million on a study over 5 years. The interesting thing is the guy that they hired, a top-flight scientist, Dr. George Carlo, was hired basically to review all the literature, bring in a really good scientific team, and investigate exactly what was behind this controversy. And he did that. And the thing that happened with George Carlo, which was kind of interesting, is, you know, normally when you're doing corporate research on at least in the sciences, you're connected to, you know, a scientific team with the various corporations that you're working with to look at the material as you're developing and interpret that material. But in this case, what he was given was a project manager, not even so much a project manager, but his main contact point was a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. In other words, it wasn't the science they were concerned about, it was the political fallout. So they made sure they had a publicity company and lobbying company interfacing with the scientific team. But George, you know, put together, Dr. Carlo put together a team of experts. They began to look at this subject, and over that 5 years, analyzed the literature, and then finally came out with their final report, which they issued, and, you know, took quite a bit of noise back in the late 90s. And what the industry did is go out immediately and say, see, everything is safe, it's all good, no problems. Well, Dr. Carlo, that is not exactly what he said in his reports. He got pretty incensed about it and actually put together a book called Cell Phones, The Invisible Hazards in the Wireless Age. And what it does is lay the foundation for what may, in fact, be the mechanism behind not only tumor formation, but many of the other effects reported by excessive use of cell phones. And, you know, we'll talk about that through the morning and the early afternoon today as we get into this topic. But cell phones, when you start to think about the things that are being reported, things like heating behind the ear, you know, where you actually put the receiver up, are noted by most people who use them over, say, an hour a day. Other studies involving as many as 15,000 people have been conducted in Europe. And what these studies show is you get the heating behind the ear. Some people suffer from short-term memory loss, confusion, erratic sleep patterns, interruptions or interference with sex drive, increased levels of stress. All these things are being reported from heavy cell phone use. And what Carlo showed is exactly what was maybe behind some of that. Music's coming up. We're going to go to a break. And after the break, we'll get right back into this subject. Thanks for being with me. You're on RBN Live. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And you're listening to RBN Live. And we're coming to you every Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday morning Central Time, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Today's topic is cell phones, and the call-in number, if you want to get into this conversation, is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. You know, just before the break, we were starting to talk about these effects that Carlo and his associates were finding. They had then issued out their report. The report went forward. The publicist and lobbyist actually had press conferences around the world talking about the safety of it. Got quite a bit of media, and it was shortly thereafter that George Carlo started to work on a project really to lay open this issue, and he began to refute what the industry that incidentally had paid him and his team had spent over $25 million to accomplish the research. And what he found in terms of tumor formation is firstly, it had a lot to do, he felt, with duration, time that you actually use the phone, and not necessarily in one call, but perhaps over accumulative time over the course of a day, weeks, months, and years. And what he found is that heat actually transfers from the phone. And the phone is producing a microwave. It's like very similar in the same range, the high end of radio frequency ranges, microwave ranges. This is the first time we've taken that kind of device. Now, granted, it's very low power, but when you place it next to the head, it actually transfers heat into the brain, and it breaks down what's called the blood-brain barrier, that part, that mechanism that sort of protects us from chemicals within the bloodstream from actually making it in into brain tissue. As that breaks down, the other thing he found is that it may be it slows the actual DNA repair that normally would take place, slows it so that repair doesn't take place, and then you get these malformed cells that turn into tumor masses. And so when you look at what he found in all of this, it was an interesting report. And then he also showed graphically the differences in the amount of heat penetration, say, for little children versus adults. And what he found is that if you look at the skull of a five-year-old using either a portable home phone or a cell phone, one of these wireless-type phones, pressed against their head, the heat changes actually go completely across, almost touching the other side of the skull. Over 400% more energy transfers into the head of a five-year-old than an adult. In a 10-year-old, it's approximately 200% more energy transfers than in an adult. And the reason that is basically just skull thickness. The amount of hardened, rigid material between the cell phone and the head absorbs a lot of that heat, whereas young children, it transfers pretty readily. As it transfers, then you get the problems, because with small children, developing children, this is one of the areas that George Carlo pointed out was high risk. In fact, under what's called the precautionary principle, this is a principle applied to research where once you get to a point, even the very first indications that there may be public health issues or health issues or other concerns about new technology, the precautionary principle says that we announce those problems right away. We let people know what we're finding, even though it may not be conclusive yet. In other words, we may not have those second and third and fourth studies to confirm those results, but there's enough information, we say, okay, in the interest of public health, we're going to let people know. Now, they apply this principle in Europe and have for over 40 years, and it's interesting, they've applied it to environmental issues, they've applied it to health-related issues, and they've never once been wrong, which I think is an important track record. Here in the United States, we wait for the at least the three studies before we start to go forward and press things into regulation. And in Europe, what it is precaution. So they announced to the public at the beginning of the school year, as an example, that parents with children under the age of 16 should not let their kids use cell phones. Now, that's interesting. You know, you get that kind of a report in August every year in Great Britain as a public service announcement based on the principle that young children utilizing these devices may have problems. Now, here in the U.S., the marketing actually targets young children to establish a pattern of cell phone use early in life with the idea that as they get older, in fact, what we're seeing with teenagers now as they're becoming adults, they're not even buying landlines. They're not getting regular hard lines for telephones. They're just getting cell phones. It's like their universal communicator cost is dropping, so the use is increasing, and these problems are being reported more widely, and we're starting to see additional studies. You know, when we wrote our first material on cell phones was in 2002. Actually, even going back further, 2001, we published an article in Explore magazine. That article you can see on our website at earthpulse.com, earthpulse.com. And if you go to that site and you just do a search under cell phones, you'll get to an article that gets into the meat of the subject and really expresses what these studies show. And there's, I think there's 89 or 90 reference sources on that article. That material we expanded quite a bit and put in a chapter in the book Earth Rising 2, which you can also find information on that at that same website, earthpulse.com. And we dealt with the cell phone issues mainly because we saw this as, one of those sort of sleeping hazards. You know, it'll take a long time before you start to see it show up in the statistics in the U.S., but you're starting to see some of the effects. If you think about, for instance, brain tumors, you hear more and more about people that are extraordinarily busy dying of brain tumors. Johnny Cochran recently, some of these other guys, big CEOs of corporations. And, you know, if you take a look at this, I think this is what you're going to see is patterns of cell phone, portable phone use with very busy people is extremely high. You're going to see it with people that have cell phones as a condition of employment. And there's things that can be done, you know. I mean, this is not a problem that needs to be accepted as just part of the use of these devices. The devices can be made much more safe. Cell phones can be engineered to discharge a lot less energy. When we began to first look into the subject, we even found that cell phone use, just a type of phone, even within the same brand names, you could see a difference in energy outputs by up to 600%. That's a huge difference between one brand and another, or one model and another within the same brand name. But this is a situation with phones. The call-in number for today, again, is 800-313-9443, and we're talking about cell phones and cell phone safety. Hopefully we'll get into some more of this issue as we go through the day. We'll probably bounce around on a couple other topics as well. So if you're interested in the material we're covering, give us a call at 800-313-9443. Cell phones, the other thing that is not so well known, cell phones in the United States and around the world actually have another component beyond the safety issue. The safety issues now, the studies have been replicated. What we're seeing as a result is the industry is reducing the amount of power that's being released from these phones, at the same time re-engineering circuits, which is actually a good idea. You know, if you have cell phone inefficient use of the energy within a phone is where you get the higher levels of radiation coming into the head, whereas if the phone is using power well and not using as much of it to accomplish what it needs to accomplish, you get less radiation in the head. The other place where people use cell phones a lot within their cars, you know, the basic framework, the steel framework of a car and moving between zones within a car actually cause the phone to increase its power output in order to make it through the frame of a car and to its signal tower. And each of these things, again, changes the way in which power is transferred into the head. One of the things that's being done, you know, by a lot of people these days, and you see it all the time, is these hands-free setups where the phone is laying down on the seat next to them, or often they attach it to their body. They just move it down, you know, down around the liver or the kidneys, which is not a good idea because you have a lot more soft tissue there, so the penetration of the energy is even much deeper than it would be, say, in the head area. But you want to get it away from the body. That's the main thing. The other thing, the hands-free sets, if they're well-designed and they're good insulating quality, they work just fine, and they take care of the problem. If they're poorly insulated, what you have is the energy actually shunts up and into the ear, so they act like an antenna, routing the energy more directly into the inner ear, where it even is more problematic. That can be avoided. You know, they have, if you look at new computers and new electronics devices now, you'll see on power inputs these little buds that fit around the power cord, and they have a material in them that breaks any interference or electromagnetic fields before before they go in or out of devices. Those you can get at any Radio Shack. You put them on your earbud just before it goes into the inner ear, about 3 inches from where that earbud goes in, and you basically solve your problem. Even if it's a bad quality device, that will solve the problem. Relatively inexpensive, easy to do. One of the other things that people can do when they're getting their next phone is get a speakerphone, you know, the kind that you hold away from your head so that you never really put it up to your head. You've got a speaker talking to you and you're talking to it. That solves a problem as well. You know, and when you look at cell phone use, one of the things that, we see is as they prove out the literature in the U.S. and start to accept it, where it comes into play is how long did the industry know and are we going to be in the same boat as we were with the tobacco scandals where they said, oh, everything's wonderful and everything's safe, when, in fact, their own materials and research didn't indicate that. And I think we're seeing the same thing set up here. Employers that require employees to use these as a condition of employment, you know, that's a pretty standard thing. That starts to breed a lot of other types of litigation down the road. Hear the music coming up. We're going to a break. If you want to call in right after the break, 800-313-9443. And you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich on Changing the Way We See the World, RBN Live. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to RBN Live. And this program is on every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time. So pass that word on. If you're interested in some of the topics that we're covering and you have other topics that you'd like us to cover in future programs, let us know. You can let us know by calling in at 800-313-9443. Or you can email us, and you can go to our website at earthpulse.com and do that. Let us know how you like the program, how it's going for you. If there's topics you want us to cover, send it on to us. We'd certainly like to hear that. The main issues we're going to be covering over the next several weeks, we're going to get into all of the technology issues that I've covered historically, and we're kind of working our way through those. And then we're going to get into some of the newer topics that we've been researching the last few years and haven't really gotten out there. You know, one of the projects we've been completing is a book on the subject of controlling the human mind, which is a program we actually did on this show a few weeks ago. It's archived at RBN Live. People can listen to that and find out what we had to say about that topic. But this is what we think is one of the most controversial. You know, it's again getting sort of into the privacy issues and what all those involve in terms of surveillance technologies, and even the subject today, cell phones, gets into a little bit of that. You know, beyond the health issues, there's also the personal privacy issues related to cell phones that most people aren't aware of. You know, back in 2000, we published a book, Earth Rising, The Revolution, and we started talking about cell phones all having this new requirement, which was a built-in GPS system, and that's a geographical positioning system. It's for navigating, you know, on your car. You hear about it in the new automobiles, you know, this great OnStar and some of these other programs where you get broken down, they can tell you exactly where you are, and in fact, they can tell you everywhere you've been. In cell phones, they have a microcircuit built in that does the same thing. It allows you to triangulate position any time that the signal is coming off of that phone. So, for instance, as you travel between cell towers, it doesn't just track when you make the call, you know, who made the call and where you made the call to. It also tracks where you were when you made the call and where you were in between calls. And when you start to use this kind of technology and store the data, now why did they require that on cell phones? The excuse was, of course, it's for your own safety. You know, this is about when you dial the 911 number and you're in a house, at least they can trace it if you go unconscious. And the story was, well, you've got a cell phone and so many people are using them now. And, it, you know, and it's a reasonable argument, certainly a plausible one. The issue is would they use the data in other ways? It's kind of like keeping track of everybody's phone calls in the United States. Something else that we actually published in the book Earth Rising, The Revolution in 2000, that just now is making mainstream media as the NSA's program of monitoring phone conversations in terms of who called to when. They're not talking about the conversation side, which has been done by the NSA and other agencies of our government for decades. I mean, through programs that have been discussed on other radio shows. One of them is the Echelon program, which, you know, gets into the monitoring of phone communication between five countries starting after World War II. But cell phones, having this component built in, when it first came to our attention, was in litigation, a criminal litigation in Switzerland, where Swisscom had actually provided 6 months of travel information on a person standing trial for some criminal charges. So they were not only able to track his phone conversations in terms of who and when, but also where he was. And so that actually was instrumental in their case. It was after that that we started hearing the calls for this to be a requirement on U.S. phones. And if you look at more and more development of forensics and information, that information becomes useful. Because you get your warrant, and then you can go backwards to those phone records for years now because status storage has gotten cheaper and cheaper, and track every movement a person makes. Now, for criminals, you know, people will say, hey, that's not a bad idea. You know, that way we can catch up with these guys. But here's the problem, and this is always the problem when you get into the personal privacy issues, is who is the adversary? You know, one of the things that we see keep reoccurring theme in a lot of government literature between Department of Justice and Department of Defense is that adversary is anyone who disagrees or challenges American policy, which essentially is every human being in the United States, because every one of us at one point or another have been disenchanted or upset with U.S. policy. As a consequence, you know, this kind of tagging of the average person as potentially a problem, this is where personal privacy issues in this century have to become more important to all of us, because just because we disagree with our government doesn't mean that we don't appreciate what we have in the United States. In fact, it's that very ability to disagree that's allowed us the personal freedoms and liberties that we all enjoy. But when you start to look at technologies, you know, cell phones now are sort of the universal tag. Very few people don't have them, you know, and, you know, in my household, you know, I don't have one, you know, that I use on a regular basis. What I've got is one of those that I use when I travel because I have kids at home, and the phone is just not given out. We have it sitting here on the shelf with dead batteries until we travel again. And, you know, for that kind of use and occasional use, they are an incredibly useful instrument. People that use them often, really, you can deal with it at home or at the office. So looking at the use patterns is a big part of this. The music's coming up. You're listening to RBN Live, and this is Dr. Nick Begich, and we'll be back right after the break. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And the call-in number today is 800-313-9443. And I see we've got Chip in Tennessee hanging on. Are you still with me, Chip?
I appreciate you taking my call.
Hey, no problem. What's on your mind today?
I've got something called a harmonizer on our cell phone. It's a little button. It looks like a button that secures onto the phone, and it's supposed to harmonize the frequency so it doesn't hurt you.
You know, there were a number of devices that we had looked at back, again, probably 7-8 years ago, and it was right around that time the Federal Trade Commission took 7 devices off the market. And this is what I would say. There is a ceramic material that was developed, I know, by Korean company that's been licensed to several different companies. That was the electronics firm actually developed this ceramic material that absorbs RF, and they use it for securing microcircuits, those really fine circuits that RF radio frequency energy can interfere with. And so that's out there. Now, this product you're talking to me about, I don't know that one specifically by name, but I would suggest you can do something that we did very easily, is take a look at the packaging it came in, find out what the patent numbers are.
Oh.
Take a look at those patent records. They're online. They're very easy to get. And the reason I say that is most of these products don't have either independent scientific literature or U.S. patents. And U.S. patents are not easy to get. You know, you have to prove your claims.
Sure.
C see in the record is usually just a couple of pages, but there's usually behind that, you know, reams of information, because the examiners are scientists challenging the effects. And so I would really take a look at that particular product and see if the patents show up on the Internet, because that's where you'd find them, U.S. Patent Office, U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Okay.
And it's easy to find on the Internet. A quick Google search will get you there. That would check that device out. Some are good, some are bad. I can tell you, if you go to that hands-free kind of setup and you use, you know, you can get these for like a couple of bucks at Radio Shack. They're like a little snap-on button that fits right around the wire going into the ear.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them on electronic computer devices all the time now. Almost every electronics now have them. But you can get one. Those are very inexpensive, and they're much, I mean, those I know will solve the problem. Getting the phone away from the head is the most critical element there, and away from the body. And then they're fine, you know, and they're very easy to solve the problem. These other devices, take a good look at what's behind them in the science. Don't just take testimonials, what somebody has to say, really look.
Yeah, I heard about it on RBN.
Yeah, yeah. And like I say, there's a lot of good devices. This may be one of them, but just check it out. I'm not familiar with this one particularly. And make sure that it has those kinds of credentialing information. And, you know, good companies will stand by their products as well. So you look at that as another factor. You know, scientific studies are expensive. A lot of small companies start out. They don't have those studies, but they have really good policy in terms of how they deal with returns and how they deal with customers. And then eventually they get their scientific studies done. So, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not a good product. Just take a look at what's behind it.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Chip.
Thank you very much.
The call. Thanks. I appreciate
Goodbye.
It. You know, again, cell phones, you know, and cell phone safety, a big issue. You know, the personal privacy side of that equation we were talking about just before the break, you know, that's a major issue when you start to look at how policies evolve and what happens. You know, when you think about cell phones, for us it sort of triggered another kind of line of looking. You know, we did a lot of work on technology applications that impact personal privacy. And, you know, cell phones become a part of that, if you will. And then if you start to think about the other ways in which electronic data is stored and collected, essentially all of this information is stored because storage for computers now is very inexpensive. You can store huge amounts of data. In fact, some of the new high-density data that now, I say new, it's probably 6-7 years old, which makes it almost ancient, you could store on a square inch of medium, you could store 1.5 million pages of information. You know, think about how much information is there really on each of us. You know, it's pretty minor. But when you start to think about storage density getting tighter and tighter, where you're going to be able to store on a pinhead is, you know, an amount of material that makes that 1.5 million pages look like nothing. The ability to compute at higher and higher rates, it's sort of the other half of what do you do when you sort a lot of information, like tracking all those phone calls that the NSA was doing to see who you called and when you called, that kind of data. Think about how many phone calls just that information alone would require in data storage. And the NSA is, in fact, the biggest purchaser of supercomputers for data sorting in the world. In fact, the big supercomputer companies a few years back were going under. There just wasn't enough clients. The NSA propped them up because they couldn't afford to lose the access to that type of technology. But where they're going with computers, where the NSA is headed, there's a book by James Bamford called Body of Secrets, which is an expose on the NSA. And they say that quantum computing will allow us to take what normally would take us a trillion years to compute. Think about that. A trillion years to compute will be reduced to 2 hours with the advent of quantum computers, which they're expecting, if they're not already here, they will be within the coming years. You know, and when you start to think about being able to compute that amount of information, then all the data that's being stored and collected now and added to computer banks becomes sortable. So think about all the purchases you make on credit cards, all of the financial records that banks keep, all of the medical records on computers, all of the government records, tax records, income tax records. I mean, go through the list of everything that you have in the digital world and imagine the whole planet being able to sort that data. When you look at phone conversations, you know, that data is sorted in this way, under echelon international calls and maybe domestic calls. And I would say probably domestic calls are being monitored. And the way they do this is they essentially made an agreement right after World War II. And this is in the book Earth Rising 2 and also in the book Earth Rising the Revolution. And Echelon even made it into National Geographic in November of either 2002 or 2003. You'll see it discussed. But these were listening posts set up in Canada, United States, Great Britain, Australia, and New Zealand. And they picked up all international calls and communications, whether it be fax, telex, telephone, now computers, cell phones. I mean, whatever those electronic transfers of information were, it monitors and sweeps that. And using very powerful computers, they look for what are called key words, key phrases, or even voice prints, voice analysis. Analysis of someone's voice is unique as your fingerprint. In 5 to 20 seconds, you can deduce who exactly it is, just like taking a fingerprint or a DNA sample. It's called biometrics. It's part of that biometric measures that make us unique as individuals. This type of data collection, once you have the speed to sort it, becomes too tempting for governments to avoid. And what happens on the now is over 300 agencies and the five governments submit what are called dictionaries, these keywords, phrases, voice prints, whatever it is that they want sorted. And this this computer system literally picks that out of all of those communications and reduce it down based on the computer doing most of the work and then having thousands of technicians analyzing what the computer's reduced to a small amount of information. Now, the thing that's always been a problem with sorting information is the amount of data versus the amount of staff and how powerful computers are to take up the slack. Well, that slack is being taken up dramatically and rapidly by computing power, intelligent computing, so less and less human interface, human participation is required. And yet the sweep of all that data gives you very accurate profiles of individuals and populations. And so if you're using that data to manipulate outcomes, then you got to start to ask, you know, what is the personal privacy worth? And then you ask yourself, who's using the information, you know. I mean, if it's you're in the United States and you're thinking about how that might be used, and you're in China and you're thinking about how that might be used, you can see where technologies and the temptation to use them inappropriately is certainly out there. And, you know, when you start to think about, and, you know, cell phones, as we started this conversation today, are really just a small part of a bigger, a much bigger picture in terms of how technology works either for us or against us. You know, again, the call-in number today is 800-313-9443 if you want to get in on this conversation. We're talking about cell phones and personal privacy. We're going to do more with the personal privacy issue in the next hour. But call in, 800-313-9443. Questions or comments on either of these topics. You know, cell phones, again, when you start to think about the safety side, you know, things are evolving. The wireless world as such is changing too. It's not just cell phones now, but think about the background noise, the amount of radiation of various forms that man puts in our environment. In the case of radio frequency energy, the stuff of cell phones and radio broadcasts, we've put in 200 million times more energy that surrounds us at every moment of every day than nature created a little over 100 years ago by the natural background noise. So, you know, you have that kind of in the background. As sort of a metaphor for that, think about how much information has changed and how this whole technology revolution has really, in one way, provided incredible opportunities, but on the other hand, has also provided a lot of temptation for misuse. And, you know, the legislation that, you know, used to kind of go along with technology has not happened because of the speed in which technology is changing. I mean, think about cell phones. They went from 0 to 60 in a few years, you know. I mean, we went from nobody having or these big cumbersome portable phones to, you know, virtually everyone is plugged into a cell phone somewhere. And, you know, that is a dramatic change in the way people communicate in just a few years. You know, it used to take a lifetime for the change to take place. I mean, as a kid growing up in Alaska, in the 1960s, you know, I remember we still had part what were called party lines. There wasn't enough phone communication lines for everyone, so you shared them with a half a dozen or a dozen families, and you picked up your phone, and hopefully nobody was on it. You had a dial tone instead of somebody else's conversation. I mean, that's the way phones worked in the 60s. That's 50 years ago. You know, and when you look at even before that, you know, television sets as communication. You know, until the 50s and 60s, that was a pretty rare thing. You know, until the late 60s, where most people had television sets in the United States. I mean, all these things that have changed so dramatically, the way in which we receive information, and now the Internet, you know, another place that we've changed dramatically our ability to communicate, but at the same time increased our ability to be monitored as individual citizens, because now all of your interest areas that you dial into, you know, that data is stored somewhere. That data is used for either marketing or used for other purposes. And, you know, here's the thing about it. You know, when you start to see how the data is used, you realize that more and more of the script thrown at us is really a script indeed. It's based upon polling. It's based upon focus groups. It's based upon data collection and analysis to basically sort of tell people what they want to hear, as opposed to the way public debate used to operate is people would get into the fray of it. Everybody would have strong opinions. You'd voice those opinions, and then people would draw their own conclusions based on real disclosure of all of the relevant information. That's what healthy public debate and persuasion is about. Now what we have is this spin-driven, poll-run pablum where people don't talk about what they feel. They talk about what you want to hear. And this becomes manipulative in terms of political outcomes, because the temptation to use technology to forge political outcomes or media outcomes. I mean, think about it. If you're an advertiser and you can determine with a high degree of accuracy so much about a person, their likes, their dislikes, their purchasing patterns, where you can then target advertising directly at them that reflects those patterns, increases their likelihood of making a purchase or making a decision. Think about a political campaign. You know, I mean, if they know enough about you, they can really tailor the message. You know, you might have a politician running that has 10 major issues, and there's only one of them you agree with. And the other nine, you wouldn't vote for them in a million years if you knew any one of them. Well, what they'll do is they'll target, and this is how public media works, is they'll target the message to those receiving that message, so they only hear the parts that will resonate with them. That becomes highly manipulative, and that's the kind of outcome. It's already happening. I mean, if you look at how politics runs, it's already happening. You know, my family has been in government for two generations, you know, here in Alaska. My dad was a congressman, a state senator. My younger brother, Mark, is the mayor of Anchorage, just elected a second term, nine years on the Anchorage Assembly here. Half our state lives in this community. You know, when we look at, you know, what's happening and how politics has changed, you know, it's really gone to that. You know, when you look at how politicians frame their issues and what they do. Like this year, you know, we're seeing the same kind of spin. You know, they don't want you dealing with the hard issues that Americans are tending to gravitate and agree on. They want us to disagree again on the social issues Americans are never going to agree on, and the courts will flop every 40 or 50 years on. And, you know, the reality is very important issues are being decided by very few folks, and the rest of us are being sort of left in the dust. These technologies that are convenient and serve our interests need to be regulated in a way that also serves our interests and not just corporate interests. And we see too much public policy working against us these days. You know, when you think about personal privacy issues, you know, these revelations coming out of the mainstream media on wiretaps and roving wiretaps, which we've heard bits and pieces about, the fact that even the super secret courts that are available to the federal government to issue warrants that are secret warrants that have been used for years under foreign policy regulations in the United States and surveillance regulations and national security laws. And now this administration, the only one that's ever been turned down, has its own system, you know, outside of the courts, you know, and I find that pretty objectionable. You know, even when you think about accountability and the privacy side of the equation, what we're seeing is a shift in transparency, where the government in democratic republics like ours you used to be able to look into and see a little more clearly what was going on within our governments, so we could shape it and frame it. Today we have an opaque government, one hidden from public view, where the average person can't look in, can't participate in the way that we used to. Well, our lives become increasingly transparent and flexible for those that would manipulate political outcomes would want. And, you know, that's a big change. And it's the technologies of this century that have brought about many of those changes. And, you know, our purpose in this program on Wednesdays is to kind of talk about those technologies and what's happening with those technologies, how they're affecting our lives. You're listening to RBN Live. I'm Dr. Nick Begich. And the call-in number is 800-313-9443. And we're headed for a break. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to RBN Live, and we're brought to you every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. And today's topics, we're talking about cell phones, and we're also covering some of the issues on privacy-related technologies. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. Also, I want to mention a lot of the research that we do is actually sponsored by the Lay Institute on Technology, and you can see their website at www.layinstitute.org. Again, layinstitute.org. And our books and videos and materials are available on another website. It's earthpulse.com, www.earthpulse, E-A-R-T-H-P-U-L-S-E, earthpulse.com. For more information, and as well as some more detailed articles on some of the subjects that we cover on this program. Again, the call-in number is 800-313-9443 if you want to get in on today's conversation. You know, the issues surrounding a lot of these technologies, you know, makes it into the mainstream. You see little blips of news, but it never really gets connected together very well. You know, you hear, and the way we collect a lot of our data is actually just out of the mainstream media reports. And by compiling those across a large segment of publications, as well as looking at scientific and academic studies, military reports, a lot of government data is available both in the United States and in other places around the world, and independent academic research. And by putting all that together, really our job has been to try and translate it into plain language. You know, we've done that now for 12 years. Not so much to slant the issue, although we have very strong opinions, you know, and we don't shy away from those strong opinions. But at the same time, it's the delivery of the information. You know, in the books that we've published, over 1,350 sources are referenced there. 700 of those sources have been posted on the layinstitute.org site for availability. You know, there's search indexes that are being built there that will allow people to take the data and the information that we're covering in these programs and actually get the original source material, summations of it, and the full footnoted sources so you can go and pull that data yourself and confirm what we're saying. And, you know, and I think that's important because these are the topics that are going to change and shape the 21st century. You know, technology today is changing, doubling every 9 to 10 months from where we were at the invention of the wheel to where we are today. All of that doubling every 9 to 10 months. And at that rate, some discussion, some translation, if you will, of what these technology topics are all about. And, you know, we've done that. Over the years, we've probably collected well over 20,000 documents. We've screened out several hundred thousand to get to the root of some of this data. And, you know, technology has been incredible, and it continues to be. And now it's just happening so fast. We really wanted to serve the interests of freedom and liberty and not work against it. And that's where the temptation of misuse of technology comes in. And we're starting to see, you know, a lot of that. There was a book written years ago. Right after the break, we'll get into that and talk a little bit about the technology of the 21st century and how they're shaping everything. This is Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World on RBN Live. Welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to RBN Live. We're here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. and appreciate you being here. You know, just before the break, I was getting ready to talk about sort of where this all goes. And, you know, I got to go back back in time a little bit, and we have to talk about what was going on in this country back in the 60s and even in the 70s in terms of personal privacy-related issues, because a lot of these issues are coming back again today. You know, back then, there were a number of problems. There was the idea of, there was a big report, actually. It came out in June 1975, reporting on the activities of the Central Intelligence Agency. And the report was a report to President Carter at the time, and it was talking about the abuses that had taken place. And the abuses included the infiltration of domestic groups like student groups, the same kind of thing that's happening again today, only it's not just student groups. It's, you know, every social club in the country is being looked at, you know, and reviewed in terms of anyone that's activist or has an opinion on anything. The other things they were doing then was searching and opening people's domestic mail, wiretaps, experimentation on human citizens, American citizens without consent. I mean, a whole array of things came out in this report. Many of those things we're hearing about again today, and it was during that time in the early 70s that my dad served in the 92nd Congress. He was actually it was right before Watergate. My dad was running for a second election. It was during a time when the Alaska pipeline was being debated, one of the biggest energy issues of the country ever settled, in fact, one of the biggest energy issues, as well as the Native Land Claim Settlement Act, one of the biggest, in fact, it was the biggest native transfer of land to indigenous Americans and the biggest cash settlement in the history of the country. At the same time, Watergate was brewing in Washington. It was just before the second election of Richard Nixon. Hale Boggs, who at the time was a congressman from Louisiana, and he was also the majority leader in the House, very powerful position. He came up to campaign for Dad, and on the day after a speech was made alluding to the issues of Watergate, the plane disappeared, never found again. And it was during this time in the 70s that there was a lot of question about where technology was going and where it was going to take us. And a book was written called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And it was written by Zbigniew Brzezinski. And, you know, for those that don't remember, you know, this is published in 1970 when he was at Columbia University. This is before Zbigniew became National Security Advisor under Jimmy Carter. And this was also the same time, the same time frame as MKUltra, the mind control program of the CIA, was being dismantled, and at the same time the Nixon administration was falling apart. At that critical moment, you know, people started disappearing on airplanes. My dad and Boggs were a pair of them. Turns out 20 years later, there's actually FBI telexes indicating they knew where the plane was, and yet it was never recovered. But at that time, technology was advancing, and this is what Zbigniew Brzezinski had to say, and I'm going to quote it directly so I don't misquote it. And he says, more important, more directly linked to the impact of technology, it involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled and directed society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite whose claim to political power would rest on allegedly superior scientific know-how. Unhindered by the restraints of traditional values, this elite would not hesitate to achieve its political ends by using the latest modern techniques for influencing public behavior and keeping society under close surveillance and control. Under such circumstances, the scientific and technological momentum of the country would not be reversed, but would actually feed on the situation it exploits, unquote. Now, for those who don't remember Zbigniew Brzezinski, we'll talk a little bit more about him right after the break, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich, RBN Live. And welcome back to RBN Live, and you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and I'm coming to you from my home in Alaska, and we're talking about technologies today. We've been covering a little bit on cell phones. We've been talking about the impact of privacy-related technologies. Just before the break, I had read a quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, really talking about this more directed and controlled society. And I want to go on and read a little bit more from this because it, you know, it really sets the stage. And people need to remember Zbigniew Brzezinski was one of the founders of the Trilateral Commission, one of the New York think tank that really directs much of the international and national policy in the world today, together with Kissinger, Rockefellers, and a number of other major industrial academic and political players. You know, these guys are shaping the way the world runs and directing the way that shape takes form. When you read Between Two Ages, in fact, written in 1970, 36 years ago, it's a discussion of the impact of technologies around the world and how those technologies are playing out in terms of economic and social changes. If you read this book today, and I suggest people go out and try and find it, Between Two Ages is well worth reading if you can get through Zbigniew's convoluted language. But the fact is, this is a blueprint from his perspective, and if you read it today, 36 years later, you'd swear it was a history and not a forecast, because it's all come true. You know, the changes in Latin America, the changes in Asia, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, all of those economic and social changes we've seen and the impacts of technology over the last 36 years was eloquently forecast by this guy. Now, what he said is, he goes on and he says, and I quote, "Persisting social crisis, the emergence of a charismatic personality, and the exploitation of mass media to obtain public confidence would be the stepping stones in the piecemeal transformation of the United States into a highly controlled society." And it goes on to say, and I quote, the inclination of the doctrinaire left to legitimize means by ends could lead them to justify more social control on the ground that it serves progress. The conservatives, preoccupied with public order and a fascination by modern gadgetry, would be tempted to use the new techniques as a response to unrest, since they would fail to recognize that social control is not the only way to deal with rapid social change, unquote. The point being that he's making is, it wouldn't matter who's in charge, the use of technology, whether liberal or conservative, to further some political end would in fact be the outcome. Now look at the emerging crises in a charismatic personality and what we ended up with in the last few years. You know, when you look at the changes and the willingness of people to give up personal liberties and personal freedoms in exchange for what they think is safety and security, when in fact it is an illusion. The impact of technology today, in terms of what it does or what it can do, or how it can be misused, is really heading us down that path. You know, when I look back at the writers of the 50s, the 40s, you know, you think back on, and even before the 30s, you think back on books like 1984, you know, it's a little off on the schedule, but the outcome is the same. Except the guys who wrote these texts would not even imagine how technology has now provided the gateway into exactly that more directed and controlled society. And this is where we need to take, you know, take the appropriate actions, inform legislators, make sure that legislators, when they're running this year and they're hanging around trying to get our votes, that we're asking them what progress, what initiatives to gain security over personal privacy are being made. You know, the biggest scandals in the media right now deal with the issue of identity theft. The least prosecuted crime probably on the planet, and yet the most rampant in terms of its horrible impact on individuals. And identity theft takes many forms, but it's the data availability and the misuse of data. Even the government can't secure our data. I mean, you've got 25 million veterans records floating around because of some bureaucrat not having his act together enough to secure that kind of information. You know, information in the 21st century is, in fact, power. When you think about the three legs of the 21st century, communications, information, and transportation systems are what has created the revolution that we've watched over all of our lifetimes. And those that have been around for a little bit longer than me, and a lot longer than me in some cases, have seen even more dramatic change. And what we're seeing is the compression of that change. And the things that were predicted by these policy wonks around the world, who are now shaping the outcomes. You know, and what is it about? I mean, ultimately, it's kind of taken away the individuality that used to make us as Americans stand out. You know, the whole country was based on individual liberty and individual freedom, not some squishy collective. And this is what distinguishes us from so many other attempts at this type of free society. And, you know, and what we've seen is that scares the heck out of those that would like to maintain their positions of power and control, because ultimately this country is about equity and fairness. It doesn't matter whether you're a liberal or a conservative on those basic principles of freedom, but we're forgetting them. You know, the whole system works against us right now. And what is generating so much of the problem is this generation of fear in the country, and that's gotten out of hand. You know, as a researcher, one of the areas I look into is what happens in terms of brain technologies for enhancing human performance or degrading it. And one of the things the research clearly shows is that people experiencing fear or hatred or anger or any of these kinds of emotions get what are called very incoherent brain patterns. They don't show the rhythms of clear thinking and higher emotions. When you have those experiences and you're experiencing higher emotions, love, compassion, empathy, and you're focusing your attention, you get a coherent signal, a very rhythmic pattern within the brain that shows that you're in a position to make the kind of decisions that the brain is engineered to make. When you're in fear, that fight or flight response kicks in, and a whole different mechanism happens in terms of how we're wired as human beings. And so when we have the continual daily stress and worries of an economy that nobody understands and a government that really comes at us instead of lifting us up in the way it probably ought to, as well as just the general stresses of life, you know, and the technology layer on top of it has added both stress as well as solutions, but nowhere near as rapidly as anyone would have expected. You know, back in the 60s, there was this big discussion of the so-called leisure society because of all this great technology was going to free us of all these burdens. And when you look around, the standard of living in the United States has gotten degraded. In fact, for the most of the world, you know, people's relevant view of standard of living has changed. I mean, we think about places in the developing world as substandard and economically deprived, but that's only against our own standard of what's valuable. You know, before we sent multinationals in to make new consumers out of them, people, if they were left alone, tended to be happy and not as miserable as they've become with so-called modern technology. And modern technology belongs in the hands of people, but it should line up with the philosophies and belief systems of those using it. And that's what's not being evaluated. When you think about data collection and the misuse of it, you know, the very companies that have lost data are the same ones that the U.S. Department of Justice and others have contracted with to collect and sort data for security purposes. So, you know, you have incompetence built on incompetence in systems that are really tracking the most important aspects of our lives, our medical records, our banking records. You know, the idea of searching those records has become an entire industry within the federal government. Now you have organizations like CINFIN that go out and look at all the financial transactions when they're investigating people. You have an array of Beyond the Echelon program. Now you got the discussion of NSA keeping track of domestic calls, but just, you know, the phone's call records. Well, you know, if you believe that, there's a bridge across the river near my house that's for sale. You know, I mean, the ridiculous nature of that claim, it's like Clinton's claim, I didn't inhale. You know, who believes it? You know, I mean, the reality is they have the technology. They use the technology within the laws that are framed within the government. They can use them. The only question becomes is who's complicit, you know, beyond the telecom companies that have cooperated in this. Who else is cooperating in this? And this is a place where consumers can make a difference. You know, start changing who you deal with based upon the information that comes out on who's abusing our liberties and who's providing data that they shouldn't. You know, think about this community of listeners that really are, you know, we're the activists out there. We're folks that get involved in issues that we care about, we're passionate about, and we don't always agree with what our governments do, no matter where we're listening to this program from in the world. And that's the idea of being able to disagree and have that kind of public discussion that brings all the facts into play. And what we're seeing with the advent of these technologies is a way to not only deny people access to information, but at the same time manipulate that information for specific outcomes, whether they be political or marketing outcomes. And I think that's, again, where programs like this, RBN Live as a network, you know, is an opportunity for controversial issues to at least have an open airing. And I think that's important. You know, we've got a caller that's been hanging in for a while, Jeff in New Mexico. Let's go ahead and take Jeff and work him in here. Jeff, are you there with me?
Hello. I was wondering if you heard on the news about these veterans that are being offered lifetime free access to the information that the creditworthiness agencies have on them because of somebody stealing their information that was on the software in some government worker's house.
Well, you know, this again is you know, one of those issues that has exposed people to risk. I mean, I think you're entitled to that at a minimum, but it would be even, you know, if anyone's ever tried to unravel the knots created when data is misused, this takes weeks, days of people's time. Right after the break, Jeff, hang in with me, and we'll come right back to this. Welcome back to RBN Live, and this is Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and we're here every Wednesday from 11 Central Time till 1 p.m., and we were talking to Jeff about the this release of information just before the break where the veterans' files were lost. You know, this is not enough just to get free credit reports. You know, the government, if there's problems associated with this loss of records, needs to be fully responsible, needs to have clerks that chase these problems down, because they can take dozens, hundreds even of hours of sorting out the problems created by identity theft. And, you know, this is, again, accountability and technology. You know, if you're going to maintain this kind of data and you're going to lose it, it's not just telling people, oh, sorry for the bad news. It's making them responsible for all of the consequences associated with that piece of bad news. And this is a level of responsibility that doesn't exist currently codified into law that makes companies and government agencies responsible for the misuse of this kind of record. And, you know, some records are protected more than others, but the regulation and the responsibilities have not chased up far enough. And in case of government losses, these employees are indemnified. You can't even do anything. They get fired, but that's it. It doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah, I wanted to contrast that involuntary giving of information to a voluntary one, like, if a person wants to donate blood to help people,
yeah,
you probably have to give a lot of personal information, and then you don't even get any money for it. So I can't see why there's so much societal sympathy given to these veterans when people don't think you should. You know, it takes a certain amount of personal life discipline to even be a professional blood or plasma donator, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like I'm reading this book, Guaranteed Income, the Right to Economic Security by Alan Shahin, written.
Yeah.
And he says in the federal budget of 1982, for welfare, $27.2 billion, veterans, $24.2 billion. So the veterans almost got as much as what the welfare was. And defense was $187.5 billion. Social Security, $154.6 billion. So you can see how, you know, welfare isn't even that much. And
right.
then you can't even get paid for, guaranteed to get paid if you donate blood. You know, that doesn't seem right to me.
Well, you know, it's, the whole system. I mean, when you think about veterans right now, you know, the veterans program, you hear about the 2,500 people that have died, but you don't hear about the 25,000 returning veterans that are disabled permanently. And, you know, there's a responsibility that goes with that. And, you know, when you compare defense budgets, actually the defense figures I have are over $500 billion, including all the separate appropriations that have come in for defense.
Yeah. And those figures I are given were from 1982.
Yeah, this is the current frame is over $500 billion. And the percentages are even less going to welfare and even less going to veterans, which I think for veterans, this is horribly wrong. You know, we've got, whether we like what's going on in the Middle East or wherever else our veterans have been, we are responsible for these men and women when they come back, and we need to take that responsibility a little more seriously. You know, the wrong is the upside-down society. You know, I was reading a statistic out of the Washington Post that you know, they have social programs also for Indigenous Americans. And Indigenous Americans, the amount spent on health, for instance, is exactly half of what we spent on a convicted felon in the federal penitentiary system on health care. You know, we've got an upside-down system. You know, when you think about, you know, blood donors giving up personal information of a substantial nature and their DNA, for that matter, I mean, we have no idea how blood banks are safeguarding our data. And, you know, this is all important information. The only safety valve, you know, for DNA in public law is a executive order that Clinton signed off that gave federal employees, if they need any more protection, protection of their DNA. And yet we still don't have that for the average citizen. So, you know, it is an upside-down equation. I agree with you. The way information is used and manipulated is also very upside down. And it's the case of fragmented public policy. You know, when you have special interests pushing legislation and getting it bite by bite, bit by bit, what you get is a checkerboard framework of policy, none of which can stand up. And we've seen it happen on too many things over too long of a time to where now the average American isn't sitting in the leisure society we were supposed to have by now. We're working harder for less purchasing power and a more cruel approach to government. And I think you're absolutely right, Jeff, is the wrong things are kept track of, and for the wrong reasons people are rewarded in this society.
Yeah, and I can tell you and the listeners some more information about relative to cell phones.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these mystery shopper outfits are having the mystery shoppers go into the cell phone offices of Verizon and these, and, you know, do reports. So there's a lot of, I think cell phone is a lot of money in it, you know, and I don't have a cell phone, you know, and so I don't even believe in doing a mystery shop in one of these cell phones because I dislike cell phones to that degree, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the whole thing, it is a big industry. It's now, you know, tens of billions of dollars. This is why these industries regulate a lot of the policy. We're going to the break. Jeff, thanks for calling in. And when we come back, I've got another Jeff holding on another line, so we'll take him as well. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and you're listening to RBN Live, and we're on every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So stay tuned for future shows on technology. We've got Jeff in Massachusetts standing by, so let's go ahead and take that call.
Oh, good afternoon, Nick. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Good to have you on.
Oh, yes. Nick, like you, I love to think outside the box. And speaking of thinking outside the box, you know what? A couple of issues. Number one, cell phones. I hate cell phones. They are dangerous. It can affect your brain in ways that that people don't even realize. There's a lot of physics involved in it, which I won't get into. But simply put, the government can monitor your cell phone calls because it's known as radio transmission.
Right.
That's a fact.
Right.
And my number two issue is the book Between Two Ages by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Right.
You know, Zbigniew Brzezinski used the term called a technocratic society.
Right.
Which is fascism.
Right.
And the simple fact of the matter is, I really believe this, and it's going to sound grim, but I believe that the era of the free election is over for several reasons. Number one, let's say for the sake of argument that you had a good, true patriot running. They would paint that guy as Count Dracula with a SWAT sticker on the back holding a copy of Mein Kampf.
Right. I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, you know, there's this idea of it happens all the time. We've seen it, you know, and I still think there's a little bit of time. You know, what they did in Australia is a dangerous thing, and I mentioned it in an earlier program. It was they made mandatory voting.
Yes.
And people go, oh, what a great idea at first, but when you think about it, when you have 7 or 8 or 10 or 20% of the population voting, they're the activists. They're people like you and me, potentially,
yeah,
that are showing up. And if you can use whatever alternative media might still be out there, we might still have a fighting chance if the election system is still intact. But here's what happened in Australia. by requiring mandatory voting, and it's a penalty. I mean, you get tax penalties, you get all kinds of penalties, you can't get driver's licenses if you don't vote. And so people thought, oh, what a great idea. Well, when the majority of people are swung by a 30-second television spot on what they're going to brush their teeth with and don't care enough to go to the polls, what you end up with is whoever can afford the media and control that media will definitely win every one of those elections. In this country, we haven't done that, but there's discussion about mandatory insurance as an example, that if you don't get it, you get penalized with taxes.
That's it. Massachusetts is like that.
Yep, and when you start to create these mechanisms that force you into fitting a frame, then the next thing is, now everyone has mandatory insurance. Well, you don't follow your doctor's prescription for the psychoactive drugs you might need, then maybe you get tax penalized for that. I mean, it's one step along the way to this overreaching kind of society that demands then you to fit into their framework. And that's not what liberty is about. You know, the decisions we make about our own lives, where they don't affect others, we need full information to make those decisions. And we need a press that isn't there to say and do whatever it wants, but fills its first obligation to inform the public so we can have that kind of debate and solve some of our problems. And the election fraud issue is a huge issue in terms of how elections are electronically controlled. And it's, again, wherever there's initiative petitions where you get a signed petition, you can get things to change. That's one of the things you want out. I mean, here in Alaska, we still have paper ballots that are kept for close elections. And almost every year, we have elections decided by a handful of votes. My brother won one of his elections for half the state's population in Anchorage with 18 votes, you know, and
wow.
and they were recounted, and there was one vote off, you know, in the recount. So paper ballots matter. And, you know, when he won his election, that's how many family members instantly voted that year. So it was a good thing everyone did. And elections are decided often by very close numbers, but the integrity of the voting box is at risk with technology.
Well,
some things never should be automated, and voting on a piece of paper is one of them.
Well, I agree. And a correction, it's not medical insurance, but it's auto insurance, which
right.
is mandatory.
Right.
And
most
also,
states now.
Also, yeah, well, it's I don't know whether it's all state or not, but anyhow, I really believe this to be true. I believe we'll be such a technocratic society with HARP, with Russian scalar wave technology, that the era of the protest will be over. They will just zap our brains, and we will go right down to the ground. We will be the ultimate technocratic society because they have the technology to do so, but they don't want to fight. They want to wait until the baby boomers die off. When the baby boomers die off, then the clamps will come down. But you see, but if they had to, they could crush this country like a tin can and put guys like me and you into camps in Alaska, and that would be the end of it. Most people are a bunch of sheep anyways. They would just go along with it. The way I really believe this to be true, and this I told you about this book called Betrayed and Red Cocaine by Dr. Joseph Douglas. The communists have been using narcotics to soften this country up. Because you see, narcotics can make the mind more receptive to scalar wave technology. Beer can do that.
Yeah.
People don't realize what health can do to people. I've never taken drugs. I don't drink. I don't smoke. You see, my mind is clear because you're talking about biorhythmic patterns of a normal thinking mind. When your mind is polluted with drugs, you know, and all this garbage, of course, it's the equivalent of spraying a house for cockroaches or spraying fruit flies. You put a certain chemical in fruit flies, the next generation will die off. We're being sprayed.
Right. You know, there's actually, you know, it's interesting because there's some evidence of a lot of things happening within the environment. There was a paper that was produced by a number of researchers that later became a book called Our Stolen Future. And the chemicals that are put in the natural environment are now creating what are called false hormones, where actually it's the feminizing of species. You see it in the Arctic regions where the food chain is really short because the between humans and particulate materials, you know, in the atmosphere and environment, it works pretty fast with the system. And so in the northern regions, species are not producing males, or if they are, they're not fertile. And you're seeing it in human populations now in the northern parts of the world. And what that indicates is a huge change. It's not just, you know, in terms of reproduction, but you also see it in the lower forms of animals, amphibians, frogs, deformations on record levels reported all over the world. All kinds of reports on sterile species of animals now appearing in different food chains. And all of that ends up in human beings at the end of the day.
Because they eat the food.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you think about technology, again, these are all technology things that are related to our technologies that aren't getting the kind of public airing. When you say a more directed and controlled society, you know why Eastern Europe collapsed? A lot of people don't realize that it was economic as well as environmental. In the southern parts of Russia and the Ukraine around the Black Sea, Black Sea used to produce 126 species of harvestable fish. It now produces four. It was the biggest tourist area in the area. That was the whole economy, as well as agriculture. And those began to be impacted. That created the beginning of the revolution that changed all of Eastern Europe. These kinds of movements of people happen spontaneously. It's called spontaneous revolution in the literature, and it's what is uncontrollable. And yet you look at most of those revolutions that took place in the 90s, they were pretty peaceful, you know. I mean, there weren't the mass murders and killings, but they were revolutions in thinking. And that's really where I think the country is as we get more pressed by what surrounds us, and the average person becomes more impacted, you're going to see activism revitalized. And that's where the clamps can come down that you're talking about. And that's why it's important to understand what those clamps are and try to get the literature out there, at least so we
know about it.
Press it. Yeah. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. So we know about it. And, P.S., with the clamps of Russia, I believe that was feigned. Anatoly Golitsyn wrote the book called New Lies for Old and the Perestroika
yep.
Deception. That
yep.
is a fact. It was
yep.
feigned.
Yeah, you know, here's the other part of that. Is,
yes.
If we had dropped, like Nixon, if he hadn't gone to China, right, and he
yes.
hadn't opened that door, and if he hadn't gone to Russia and made the wheat deals that we made, the
right.
population would have revolted much sooner. This thing would have ended a decade or two before and about $5 trillion less of national debt before.
Right.
And we didn't see it happen. And it was deliberate. I agree with you. And we provided technologies through our industrialists. We didn't send them the tanks. We just built the factories so they could build the tanks. And we're doing the same in China. Right now in China, ideologically, every American would agree that that government doesn't stand for anything that this country stands for, yet we're building the biggest industrial revolution in the history of the planet with a population of billions that are going to be able to turn that economy directed right at us because they're the emerging superpower with an ideology that doesn't match freedom or liberty at all. And all of this are based upon the exploitation of corporate interests looking to save a few bucks for Wall Street at the expense of every main street in this country and every free country on the planet. And that's what we're building. And we're not building cheap imports. We're building the destruction of the country because of the amount of cash, U.S. dollars, being held by people adverse to this country, the Middle East controlling oil petrodollars, the Chinese controlling dollars, the drug trades controlling dollars. And if any of these dollars all came back at the same time, this economy would be over.
You are so right. Now, let me add to this. I'm going to get back to diet. You look at the diet of Middle Eastern people. You look at the diet of people who are non-Americans and compare that to the diet of Americans. And I really believe that thought is being shaped by communists. We created the communists. The communists are a monster biting us in the rear end. It's like Cleon Skolskousen said, communism and capitalism are two competing predators, and we are about to be swallowed by the Russian predator. Because, you see, I really believe this to be true, and I watched this on the Prophecy Club with Henry Gruber. There are submarines off our coast right now waiting to nuke our east and west coast. I call the northeast region of America the communist bloc, because ideologically the northeast is acting just like communist Russia in a lighter form, except we have food in our belly and beer to drink every Monday night for the football game. And that's designed, too. You have the Dusseldorf
yeah.
Revolution, and you have all these long-term plans that are being implemented. It is carefully crafted. And the only solution I can see at this point is education.
Absolutely.
That people know about this technology, because people don't even know that they're being manipulated.
Right.
And people don't even know that our government can press a button that can immobilize all protest.
Yeah, you know, this, and this knowledge is getting out there. I mean, we've been able to get a lot of information out. The latest project we're just finishing up is this text on controlling the human mind, and it's over 300 source documents. The first three quarters of the book is really about the misuse and development of the technology, all government records that are publicly released, and really lays the foundation as well as explaining the physiological mechanisms, how electromagnetic fields affect the body in clear and understandable language so everyone can get it. And we dumbed it down for the Congress, okay?
Yes.
And because, well, here's the reality. You know, my dad was a congressman, and you know, he wasn't a scientist, and most of those guys aren't. And we need to make sure they're getting good information so they can ask the right questions. And this is a problem most people don't recognize, is that the base of information that you have sets the base to which your questions and inquiries get made. And if you don't have the right people in Congress to ask the right questions about technology and science, we don't, and we'll never know. And these so-called committees that look at these issues, you know, without public input and without scientists in the room to evaluate what the Congress is being told, there's no accountability, because the accountability is in a box of ignorance. And
you are so right. And let me add this as a closing comment. Congressmen and senators are blackmailed all the time. Let's say
yep.
me as a patriot becomes a congressman tomorrow. The first thing they would try to do is throw a Mickey into my food. I would have to have taste testers before I eat my food.
Let me tell you the reality of that. My dad was in the Congress. He died serving in public office with Hale Boggs. Hale Boggs, just months before, had challenged J. Edgar Hoover, wanted him out as the most corrupt guy in the government at the time, because he was doing what Rumsfeld and others are doing today, only in those days they were tapping congressional phone lines, opening their mail, and he was incensed and had the guts to say so, and, you know, it wasn't but 6 months later they were gone, you know, off the face of the planet. The reality is, you know, accountability starts with each of us taking the appropriate actions, and that's not violent actions, that's informing people. And the Congress is still approachable. There's a few probably left there. But, you know, these issues only become important when they become important for the average person, and that's the challenge right now, is to get that information out, put it in a form that's compelling and understandable, so those in position that still might be willing to act would act. And when we did this in Europe, we had great success. When we demonstrated some of the technologies that we were talking about in open hearings, we got the beginnings of legislation that's headed down a different path than it is here, but it required a whole lot of individual actions by a whole lot of folks. And as the weeks go on, We're setting the stage for trying to invigorate some of that debate and utilizing the media that's still out there, this medium, RBN and others. You know, we hope to get that issue addressed. And, you know, and maybe we will and maybe we won't. But the one thing we know we'll have at the end of the day is a more informed public and a more vigorous debate. And I think that's what the country needs, not just in this area, but in all the areas we've been covering over these last programs.
Yes, indeed. And a clear conscience, too, and with the congressman, if all else fails, I mean, look, you had a great patriot like Joseph McCarthy who warned about communism. Guess what happened? He disappeared after they demonized him. I mean, look, you are right. There are still congressmen out there that are approachable. Forget about the ones in the communist bloc called the Northeast. But you are right. But here's the thing. There is such a pull down once you get in there. That even if you do try to do stuff right, you'll be like Ron Paul or Jesse Helms. You'll be marginalized as some wing nut, and everybody will just laugh at you while you try to push bills in and get your bills shot down.
Right, right. It happens. I can tell you, you know, I can say this, is, you know, it's been a while since my dad was there, you know, and in the first year as a freshman, he passed some of the biggest legislation in the history of the country in terms of land settlements, 44 million acres and $1 billion in 1971, and he did it as a freshman. So big legislation can still happen if people understand the system and more importantly, can get the public behind them. It doesn't take a lot to make a big difference, and I think that's what we need to recognize. You know, the American Revolution that some have reported started with 6% of the people thinking it was a good idea. You know, thank God they did. You know, And there's 6% in this country that think there's time for reform, and that percentage is growing. And I think that reform is coming. Hey, Jeff, I appreciate you being on. I've got one other caller hanging in there for a while. All right. Thanks for being with me. And I've got Phil in Florida. You still hanging in?
Yeah. Hello, Nick. I want to go back in the day here a while.
Sure.
I remember you back in when you were on that ladies' show.
And, hold on, Phil. We're going into a break, and I'll bring you right back in after the break for our last segment. Hang on, Phil. And we're RBN Live, and you're listening to Dr. Nick Begich. And you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich, and we're on every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time here on the RBN Network. And our websites, again, are earthpulse.com, EARTHPULSE.com, and our toll-free, for those interested in the books we covered today, is 888-690-1277. Again, 888-690-1277. And, Phil, you still standing by with me?
Yep, sure am. Yeah, I was trying to remember the lady's name in DeRidder, Louisiana. You used to be on her program when you first started talking about HARP.
Right.
Yeah, her sister took care of the phones, and that was Bonnie. I can't remember her name, though, the hostess.
Right. We've worked with lots of good radio producers over the years, and, you know, Louisiana's been one of those places that we've certainly had some good coverage over the years.
Yeah, I haven't heard of her for years. I don't know what to become of her. At that same time, though, there was a microbiologist. I don't think he was rated as a doctor or anything, but he was apparently very knowledgeable. And he had started the thing around the country about the stuff the government was doing and how dangerous it was for us. And I haven't heard anything of him in gosh
years. Was that Garth Nicholson?
No, it was another fellow. I can't think of his name, but he was kind of a country boy. Might have been from Arkansas, I'm not certain. But he raised the alarm on microbiology, as you did on HARP.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Garth Nicholson was involved in that issue. He was a cellular biologist at Texas A&M at one point. And his wife was a molecular biologist. And he ended up testifying in the Congress on the issue of Gulf War Syndrome back in those days. Maybe is that the guy you're thinking about?
No, it's not this fellow here that you're talking of. I can't remember his name. If I could find one of my old notebooks, I'd find it in there all right. But anyhow, you've been into this other stuff, huh?
Yeah, you know,
you left the HARP.
We've been researching technologies ever since the mid and early 90s. And the thing that happened with HARP is it became sort of the dominant theme for a lot of the radio we did over the years. And we've covered these other topics, but not nearly as in-depth, as we did at that initial HARP issue. And we published back in 2000, Earth Rising the Revolution, which was a book about technologies. We gave updates on HARP. We talked about the non-lethal weapons technologies, privacy-related technologies, many of the things that we're discussing today. We followed that up 2 years later with Earth Rising 2, which dealt with the cell phone issues, the underwater sonars. Again, a lot of material on privacy-related technologies. And then since that time, we produced four DVDs on technologies of the 21st century, the mind control issue, as well as earth changes and energy-related technologies. Technologies are what we've been trying to report on over the years, and by taking a lot of information and condensing it down and then giving the references, because that's what people know us for, is the reference material.
Yeah, well, when you started out on HARP, it was pretty much in its infancy then. It's come a long way. Is there any more danger for us now than there was then?
Yeah, actually, there's a good program we have archived on the network. We'll cover that subject again. We're at the top of the hour and the end of the program today. Phil, give me a call back next week, same time. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich.